guy who drives it through.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate we never won anything.
Man's in trouble, there's the kick! The super sub has done it again! And Motherwell are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson, defenders backing off. To get a flexion! And there goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park! Twisting! Shouting! Shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Today I'm joined by Jay and Buster to discuss, well, what's not been a particularly busy week at Fir Park. How are we, guys?
Aye, no bad.
Very good, thank you.
Good stuff. Well, not a great deal of movement in the managerial front, that's for sure. Jay had been told that there was club representatives going to Finland last week. Nothing came of that. The current betting odds have got Paul Dickov as 5-6 favourite. That kind of seems to have appeared out of left field over the course of the weekend. We're still not much clearer on who's going to be the successor team, Barraclough.
No, I mean, not even any closer to knowing who's going to be anywhere near the shortlist, I would say, at the moment. Paul Dickov's one I missed yesterday. It was only, obviously, yourself mentioning it before we started recording this that I actually realised he was in, well, I was going to say in contention. He might not be in contention. He's just been stuck there by the bookies anyway. The actual bookies' odds are always a load of nonsense. We've already mentioned the fact that Billy Stark was, you know, an early favourite last time round, according to the bookies. Simo Vallecari, I think, was 8-1. Last Thursday, and then by the Friday it was something like 1-5, purely because a reporter had tweeted that we were going out to meet him. So there's no point in really paying much attention to the odds, but it kind of just sums up that nobody knows, you know, nobody really seems to have a clue. And normally by this stage you're starting to get, you know, the same three or four names mentioned over and over again who ultimately kind of make up your shortlist, but it seems to have just went completely quiet. I don't know if it's partly because of the international fixtures, there's not so much in the press as there might have been, but even from Fir Park, you know, itself, there just seems to be a load of silence regarding it.
Yeah, Buster, we stressed that this appointment was crucial to the club in terms of moving forward. I kind of hoped for a swift appointment as well. That's certainly not looking like it's going to be the case. We're 6 days away from a meeting with Celtic at Fir Park. You wouldn't expect a new man to be in place by then?
I don't think MD would really want, you know, their first game to be Celtic. So, you know, it's maybe a blessing for whoever if we don't get them in before then. But, you know, as you says, it's I don't know who's in the frame. You read everything in the papers about the bookies or the rumours online, but I don't know who's involved. It'll be somebody that we don't expect, probably, again.
Jay, we talked about we don't want a manager in for the Celtic game. I would quite like to see someone in as quick as possible, particularly given the seemingly unprofessional attitude coming from some of the players currently as well. You want someone to get in there to freshen the place up and to maybe kick some arses and lead the team up the table rather than these guys continuing to get away with what they're doing or what they're not doing, more to the point.
I don't quite subscribe to the idea that we need to get somebody in short term. I'm quite happy. Presuming that we are taking longer because we are, you know, being very extensive about it and making sure we get the right man, then I'm happy with that. You know, obviously if we take ages and then just appoint a loser anyway, then that's not great. But in terms of, you know, trying to get someone in quickly, I don't really subscribe to that. At the end of the day, you know, particularly with things like transfer windows and things like that nowadays, it's not as though, you know, the sooner you get a manager in, the sooner he can build his own side or anything like that. He needs to wait to January anyway before, you know, he's going to bring in his own players. No, I don't buy it at all. I think that, you know, if it takes another 2, possibly 3 weeks and we get the right manager over the long term, then I'm perfectly happy with that, because I think that that's what you need to be looking at. It needs to be a long-term appointment. It's certainly what Barraclough was meant to be. It was supposed to be a long-term appointment that was going to, you know, revolutionise the youth system and get us, you know, heading towards this vision that apparently everybody at the club shared. And that didn't go particularly well, but that seems to be what we're trying to do. We're trying to get a long-term manager in, and you don't get the right man in long-term by being really quick about it. So I'm quite happy taking as long as they feel is necessary. As long as we don't get to, you know, February and we're sitting bottom of the league, that would be a bit ridiculous. But, you know, it's only been a week or two since he left. I mean, I think it's a bit early, a bit premature to start getting a bit carried away about getting a swift appointment, whether it's another 2 or 3 weeks. If we have to wait until the finished season's over to get Simo Vallecari in because the club genuinely believe he's the right man, then I'm happy with that.
Yeah, it's just, I just believe that after, I know you talked about, we believed that Barraclough was the right appointment. I don't think any of us straight away subscribed that he was the man for the job, and personally I never subscribed to him being the man for the job. But if you're going to dither for 6 or 7 weeks to appoint a manager, it's got to be the right one.
Yeah, but I mean, it all depends what you mean by dither. I mean, you know, just because on the outside looking in, it looks like dithering. I mean, if they're actually taking the time and being very extensive about it and you know, genuinely being thorough in who they're going to choose, then I'm happy with that. You know, you need to have a very thorough and extensive operation for picking your right manager, because you're right, the wrong appointment could be disastrous. So, you know, I think in this situation, and we can be very critical of the club, of the society, of Les Hutchison and stuff, but I think in this situation, they're pretty much in a no-win situation. If they appoint someone quickly, folk in the support will shout about how we've panicked, we've appointed somebody without taking enough time. And if they take a few weeks to appoint somebody, then, you know, they run the risk of people criticising them for taking too long. So they're in a lose-lose situation. And for me, I'm quite happy to wait as long as it takes.
Like you say, yeah, you know, it's, as you say, it's one of those things. It's going to take time. The last time I was perfectly happy with the amount of time they took as well. It did seem to drag on a bit, but, you know, we thought we'd appointed the right man. Didn't work out. So it's one of those things, as you say, if we have to wait to see, you know, if we're going to bring in somebody who can hopefully pick up the results, then it could be worth it. But the thing is, every appointment of this, you know, every appointment that we make is a gamble. You know, there's people out there asking about, you know, the Dekov and things like, you know, the people who are mentioned in the press, how good their managerial records actually are. But has there ever been anybody who's come into us with a great managerial record beforehand?
I get what you're saying. I was at a speaker's night on Friday night, and Craig Brown was saying that he believes that anyone could kind of blag their way through an interview. He believes that speaking to players and associates of a certain individual and what they were like to work with and everything else is a much more telling way of gauging what a manager's going to be like. And that kind of reminded me of Barraclough a bit. I could quite easily see Barraclough almost bluffing his way through an interview and being really, really impressive. But when it came down to it, he wasn't a very good manager. And hopefully we have kind of changed our technique and our method of finding a new manager, because we don't want to be kind of fooled again by someone like Barraclough, who's quite capable of talking a good game, but actually putting it into fruition was a completely different matter.
The thing with that is, of course, if the club, just say for argument's sake, that is what the club are doing, just say that they have taken that on board, whether Craig Brown said a word or someone else has said a word, and they've thought, no, we need to be more extensive and we need to actually do more research into not just what the manager says at the interview, but what people say about that manager. That's going to take time. So that goes against your actual argument that we should be making a swift appointment. You know, if we need to be more extensive, we need to be more thorough to make sure that this guy doesn't just blag his way through an interview, but actually has the support and the, you know, the recommendations of those around him. That takes time.
Yeah, I think it's more the fact that I would like to see some movement, and it's possibly just the not knowing that makes it that bit more frustrating. You want to see progress. The last game before the break, we went into the break in a defeat. We were poor against Thistle, poor against Morton, poor against Dakies. There's not that much to be positive about just now, and I think that a new manager in place would give the place that bit of lift.
I think it will. I was just going to say, I think it will, but it doesn't necessarily. It will, regardless of when it happens.
I was just going to say as well, the only way there would have been any sort of swift appointment would have been if we had somebody in place, which would have meant, you know, we were looking at getting rid of Barakoff. And I think, you know, I don't think the club were expecting that, to be honest with you. You know, the supporters probably were hoping and expecting it, but I don't think the club were. So the only way that there would have been a swift appointment would have been if they'd, you know, working in the background, talking to someone else or talking to other people about it.
Yeah, you just see, you look at Dundee United, they've, albeit unsuccessfully, approached various managers now about filling their vacancy, which became available a week after Ian Barraclough left. So it's just
that.
It's maybe just the radio silence that comes out at times, and you just think it makes you believe there's nothing going on when perhaps the behind the scenes at Fir Park's a hive of activity just now. We just don't know, and that's possibly what's more frustrating, coupled with the fact that the team simply aren't playing well enough at the moment.
I agree about the team there, but I think you're right, you know, that they probably are working away quietly in the background. Maybe, you know, Dundee United's approach was to put it out there that they want this person, you know, and, you know, hope to unsettle somebody or something like that, you know, or hope that they think that their job or their position, you know, holds more esteem than that person's current job. But, you know, I don't think there's people in there sitting on their thumbs, you know. I think they are obviously, they're obviously sitting there going through
their thumbs
to try to get it sorted. Yeah, you know what I mean.
Right, well,
apologies, man.
So we've come to the conclusion there that we're no further forward in terms of knowing who the new manager is going to be, when he's going to come in. And really, we don't know anything. That's the kind of frustrating thing about it. But hopefully we'll have a bit of clarity going into the Celtic game, so the players are at least prepared in the best way possible. And we take it from there. The following week, we visit Pittodrie. So two very difficult games on the horizon. Two games that, on current form, you would expect us to take nothing from. So I get what you guys are saying, that it's certainly not an easy start for any potential new manager coming in to face the top two teams in Scotland currently. So,
well, do you have a... You know, a preferred candidate if it was to be there then, Sparra? Have you got any of the names that have been mentioned, you know, the, you know, any of them stand out to you?
Jay said something the other week that completely rings true. From the list of candidates, whether it be through the Steelman Online forum or from Sky Bet, etc., it's easier to pick who I don't want than who I do want. I think I like the idea of Seymour coming in and freshening up the place. I think that a lot of guys in and around Fir Park have had it easy for too long. That, but at the same time, unproven in Scottish football, how does that go? I don't know. The names like Dikov, I've got no experience of him. I can't even remember who he managed in English football.
I think it was Doncaster and
was
Oldham,
Doncaster,
I think.
Aye. I think you're right, actually, aye.
I think it was Oldham, then Doncaster.
Aye.
But, you know, that's the thing with any of appointments. They look at the last year, you know, I mean, Barakoff basically came out of nowhere. Stuart McCall didn't have a great record wherever he'd been. It's, you know, Craig Brown was Craig Brown, but you can even say that, you know, his record wasn't exactly up there. You know, the problem is, your type of club we're not exactly going to start attracting people, like, you know, winners, basically people who have won things and people who are going places. Not at this stage anyway.
Well, I certainly think we're capable of attracting managers that are going places, or managers certainly that believe they're going places, because it's a great stepping stone that has been proven in the past that a bit of success at Motherwell, whether you're a player or a manager, can take you to the next level. So it's all about someone coming in and doing a good job and reaping the rewards. I think, looking back to Stuart McCall, he perhaps hung about for too long, and that's what cost him. His reputation maybe suffered as a result of these last 3 or 4 months at Motherwell, rather than people remembering him for what was some incredible achievements during these 4 seasons at Fir Park.
I definitely do agree it's a stepping stone, as you say, but the only sort of, you know, the people we're going to attract are these guys who, if you want somebody who's got some sort of managerial experience, is, you know, the guys who haven't been doing too great, or maybe somebody like Simo Vallecari, who, you know, is in his native home country. He knows, obviously, Scotland because he played here. So if he's doing well there, if that's who we want, and, you know, he wants to come here, that's the sort of appointment where, as you say, he can use it as a stepping stone. A couple of years here, does well, hopefully, and moves on. Other than that, you know, we're going to be picking up guys like Paul Dickov or the Stuart McCalls for that point, where, you know, the win percentages or whatever stats you want to look at, they're fairly average, or, you know, maybe even below average. But again, we tried the sort of up and coming thing with Barraclough and it didn't work out. Unfortunately, I think that any appointment, no matter what level you're at, is going to be a gamble anyway.
Well, I mean, if you're talking about Sparrow, if you're talking about stepping stones or managers who at least believe they're going places, I mean, having won the Irish League with Sligo, surely Ian Barraclough thought that he was coming to Motherwell as a stepping stone and he was going to, you know, go places. It was a step up, having had success in Ireland, come to Motherwell, have a good couple of years, and then look for the next step. So, I mean, there's a guy who presumably believed he was going places, maybe he still does, and was going to use Motherwell as a stepping stone. So, I mean, you know, I think those are the managers you attract. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be the good ones.
No, I certainly agree. I took kind of issue with the suggestion that the only managers we're going to get are ones on their way down. I do believe that we are capable of attracting a decent caliber of manager, and they can enhance their reputation by being at Motherwell. That's what I was meaning.
Yeah, just to sort of clarify as well, you know, I may have worded it slightly wrong then, but I didn't mean that, you know, we're going to get somebody who is no that bothered, or, as you say, on their way down. I just meant we're not going to be picking up, you know, any person who's any sort of top pedigree or whatever, whether it be even in this country, you know, or for the UK, or even abroad, you know what I mean? We're not going to get someone who's in the top of their game, I don't think.
No, I think when you look at Dundee United going ahead and inviting or trying to appoint Tommy Wright or John Hughes, they've both done fantastic jobs at St Johnstone and Inverness respectively. You couldn't see us going to another Premiership side and approaching their manager. It just seems well over ambitious and ideas above our station.
I don't think there's many teams in the Premier League who are bigger than others. So if we were looking at MD in the league, you know, and they were sitting comfortable in their job, unless we could throw, you know, loads of money at them, which I doubt, there's no way we'd be looking at appointing MD for our league, I don't think.
Well, I mean, it looks as though it's overambitious for Dundee United and all, because, you know, both Tommy Wright and John Hughes don't look as though they're going there.
Yeah, well, exactly. Again, as I say, they're comfortable, they're sitting there, they're doing decent jobs. I don't know how Dundee United financially are, or whether it be, you know, offering them a lot more money, but, you know, if it's going well, they're settled, what's the point in them moving sideways, so to speak?
Yeah, you also don't want to be that man that was in charge when Dundee United get relegated. I still don't believe for a second Dundee United will be relegated, but they're currently in their current position, they will be. So it's a bit of a rebuilding job, and especially with the attitude they've got to selling their best talent, which is a kind of part and parcel of producing young talents in Scottish football, that they are going to be moved on. But I think it's obviously been a sore point that this guy's been sold to Celtic, and it appears that McNamara and has been kind of profiting from these sales. So it's been a difficult time for them. So I can completely understand why managers aren't rushing to take that job either. We'll look ahead to Saturday's game against Celtic. Jay, it's always a massive ask to take on a club of their size and their resources. In current form, you can only really see one winner. It's going to be a very difficult afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, it is a game that you don't expect again from. Probably wouldn't. I mean, nowadays, games against Celtic are incredibly difficult anyway, regardless of how you're particularly performing. But given how poor we've been recently, you'd expect a defeat. Obviously, if FA Ambrose gets a game for Celtic, then we might have half a chance. But other than that, I think you've got to accept that it's basically just at the moment about Craig and kind of keeping things ticking along, I suppose. You know, just getting the guys in for training, playing on a Saturday, and just getting through the next couple of games. Because, you know, as you mentioned earlier, Pittodrie the week after, you know, you've got to say that over the next couple of weeks, it's looking very unlikely that we're going to get anything on the board.
Bastard, we've touched on the fact that we've struggled to defend set pieces. We'll be coming up against Lee Griffiths, who's been in absolutely fantastic form over the course of the season. It's looking like a day that we'll really need to batten down the hatches and somehow survive his goal threat.
Yeah, you know, as you say, it's going to be difficult. It always is. Even when we're in the best of form the last couple of years, we did pull a few results at the back, but generally they weren't great against, you know, the bigger teams. When I say the bigger teams, I mean Celtic and the former team that was known as Rangers. So it's one of the things where I don't think, even if we appoint a manager, for example, on Monday, I don't think you should be given control of anything. He can, you know, sit about for a week and wait, watch, see what he likes, give Craig in control on Saturday and let him pick up after the Celtic game, if we do appoint anyone for that. But I don't think anyone's expecting anything for this.
Yeah, I'll be touch and go whether I'm going to actually make the game on Saturday. I don't know whether it'll be a good thing or a bad thing if I miss it. But I suppose after the disappointment of the international break, then I suppose it's time to get back to the proper stuff. We'll obviously mention the disappointment for the national side through the week against Poland. Jay, it was a spirited performance ending in utter heartbreak. We've talked, and there's been a lot of talk in the last couple of days about the failings of the national side. Really, it's got to be said that the failure was down to the defeat in Georgia rather than conceding the last minute goal against Poland on Thursday. But the end conclusion is another summer where we'll be twiddling our thumbs and in this instance watching the three other home nations all competing in France.
Yeah, obviously I was in Georgia for the game and I did a few beers, so I can't quite remember exactly how the game went, but I do remember it wasn't the best and I've obviously not watched it back. But yeah, the whole campaign you can basically boil down to that result. A win in Georgia and we'd have been going into Thursday night, obviously in a completely different mindset. If we'd went 2-1 up in that, you know, in that circumstance, would we be more buoyed to go on and hold on? Who knows? For me, in terms of failings with the national side and with, you know, there's talk about whether Strachan will go and all that kind of thing, we were fourth seeds in the group. We were deemed as being the fourth best team in the group and we finished fourth. So, you know, the bottom line is we're just not good enough. We're not producing players. We're producing decent players. You know, you can't say that guys like Darren Fletcher and Scott Brown and those kind of players aren't good footballers, but they're not great. They're not going to get you to major tournaments. The one failing I think that we have, not just in terms of the national team, but just in Scotland as a whole, is a negative mentality, you know, an inferiority complex, be it in sport, politics, even in terms of, you know, the way you speak. You know, I remember being at school and being taught if you used a Scots word that was, you know, speak properly and all that kind of thing. So you're kind of, there is a societal problem where if you're Scottish, you're kind of, you just, there is sort of a cultural idea that, oh, we're not quite good enough, we're not quite intelligent enough, not quite fast enough, etc. So I think you see that with Scotland, because Northern Ireland, Iceland, these teams aren't particularly good. They aren't any better than we are, man for man, and yet those are the teams that are qualifying for tournaments, because they get into tournaments and they believe that they can win football matches, they believe that they can actually qualify. Whereas we go into tournaments, and I think we as fans and the media, and possibly subconsciously a lot of the players, are expecting that glorious failure. I mean, how many people came away for Hampden on Thursday saying, oh, typical Scotland, same old Scotland? You know, it was set up for the glorious failure that we do so well. And there's only a number of times that can happen before you need to actually say it's a mental thing or there's some reason for it, because it happens all the time. And, you know, it gets to the point where you are expecting it. And if we're expecting it and the media is expecting it, then I think that subconsciously a lot of players can expect it. And I think that's more of a societal kind of mentality, Scottish mentality, that then you can see in the national team rather than any particular failings with the national team themselves. But, you know, on a basic level, we just aren't good enough.
But it's become the norm, since 98, the last time that we qualified for a major finals. It still remains very difficult to accept, though, particularly when you look back in this qualifying campaign and two spirited performances against the world champions. We took 4 points from a possible six against Ireland. We're 94 minutes. They conceded the goal on Thursday night to deny us to take 4 points out of six against Poland. Our performances weren't poor. So the kind of post-mortem after it, it seems a bit kind of over the top, despite the fact I do believe that many players have reached the end of their time with the Scottish national side.
Well, you know, it's, as you say, it's four points for six for Ireland, two draws against Poland. I don't think we're any worse a team than Poland. I certainly don't think we're any worse than Ireland. If anything, I think we're better than Ireland. The problem being, we were the only team who didn't really take any points off Germany, and obviously the aforementioned Georgia game. I don't know either, to be honest with you. It's one of those things where the qualification, or the, you know, the possible qualifications were extended. The tournament sort of was extended, so the qualification was top three basically for including the playoffs. You know, we still couldn't even manage that. As you say, it's one or two of the players maybe not be seen again. There's talk about whether or not the manager should be back for the next campaign, and I'm a bit in two minds. He seems to have done reasonably well, but he's, you know, he seems to be picking his favourites no matter what. So it's, again, it's one of those things where I don't know what's going to happen there either. I don't know. There's been a lot of call-offs for this Gibraltar game today before, you know, we're recording here before it actually happens, so there's been a lot of call-offs for the Gibraltar game today. Then there's two or three of those players I would like to have seen, you know, get a bit of action, but I don't know why they've all pulled out, whether it be if they have got wee niggling injuries, or, you know, whether they've been told they're not getting a game so they can go home, or, you know, if they're saying they can't be bothered so they can go, and they've been told to go home, so I don't know. So I've not read anything into what the circumstance behind the pullouts were, to be fair, but it's whether or not you'll see, you know, the regulars back in the lineup. You know, I know Hutton gets a lot of stick. Some people don't like Whittaker, Stevie Fletcher, Darren Fletcher, you know, so
I would add Scott Brown to that. I think Scott Brown has been very poor throughout this qualifying campaign. I don't actually rate him very much as a player at the best of time. I know he seems to play a lot of square balls and shout a lot, but for me, I don't really believe that Brown's worthy of being a national captain, but
I know captain or not, I don't know, but I would say it was a bit of a nonsense that he's, you know, he's no worthy of a place in the team. He can't pass the ball 5 yards, I'll give you that, but he does a lot of hard work breaking the play up and things like that, and I do like him, but as I say, you know, I don't think that Scott Brown is one of the main sort of problems. If we're going to get Stevie Fletcher playing because of his big, strong, powerful presence, he needs to have somebody that he can play alongside for a start. This is sounding pretty familiar, to be honest with you. But, you know, we need somebody playing up front or at least in behind him as well. You know, I know Stevie Naismith was sort of playing in there against Poland. There's one or two times where I felt the two of them were on the same page. I think Fletcher had a good game against Poland, to be honest with you. He made some great off the ball runs, made a lot of space, but at the same time, Naismith was, you know, not on the same page and going the other way from him when he should have been, you know, falling in, dropping in behind him or, you know, making a burst and run through the middle. Just didn't seem to happen. So I think maybe there's a complete overhaul at everything being looked at. Maybe not personnel, you know, and the coaching staff or, you know, maybe not that wise if you feel we can maybe get another campaign out of Strachan, fair enough. But I think we need to look at how we play, and especially when it comes to games like Georgia away and things like that.
Just a final note with the national side, Jay. Would you say that Gordon Strachan's worthy of another qualification campaign, or is it time for a complete overhaul, including the management team?
No, I would stick with Strachan. I think that you don't, particularly in international football, I think that it's too easy to kind of, you know, use one campaign and say, oh, didn't qualify, get ready and bring someone else in. I think, you know, we've been through it with Burley and Levine and all that and Volks, and I think we need to just stick with Strachan. I think he's suited to international football. I don't buy into the idea that we've, you know, drastically improved under him. I mean, we can see that we didn't qualify, but I think we have made slight improvements. I think that next campaign he does need to freshen it up. I think you need to see the likes of Armstrong in there, Mackay Stephen, guys like that being given a chance at the international level. I agree that there's certain players that Buster mentioned, Hutton etc, that you know, I've passed it. You know, Hutton was great in the campaign with France and Italy about 7 or 8 years ago, but he's not really done much since, so I'm quite happy to stick with Strachan. I don't see any reason. You know, it wasn't a disaster. I don't buy that we were unlucky. I think there was a few things he said after the game that I think he would be quite disappointed in that it was all seemed to be around the fact that we didn't get the rub of the green and we were unlucky and all that kind of pattern. But in reality, we just weren't good enough. But I don't think it was disappointing enough a campaign to get rid of the manager. I would like to see him stay.
We'll finish up for this week on the Remember Well question, which was linked to the national side. What we had asked was your favourite Millwall player not to have received a cap for the national side. Actually, looking through the records, guys, there wasn't a great deal. I know that there's always talk that players from provincial clubs are overlooked. I don't think there's been too many standouts, certainly through our time as supporting the club. Is there any that kind of stood out for you guys before I go through some of the responses?
Well, obviously the obvious one that we none of us got to sort of see would have been Joe Watt. But I do agree with what you're saying. I think that there's been times in the recent years in particular when there's been sort of Motherwell fans clamouring for Mark Reynolds or Martin Corrigan to get capped. And I've never really bought into it because, you know, yeah, they've been decent for Motherwell, but they've never been international class. You know, just maybe not our national team, but a special mention for Jed Brannan just because of all that Cayman Islands pattern.
Any kind of stand out for you, Buster?
Well, again, as you said, there's always been players from our teams over the year who have been picked in squads and picked up one or two caps. So whether or not they had enough is a different question. But the question was, you know, my favourite, well, it was put to me by yourself as my favourite players who never got any caps. So mine's Steve Dykstra. That's it. I can't even think of any Scottish who was worthy of any caps, to be fair. And, you know, obviously, I would have a sort of a realistic view of the Scotland team. Whereas when Seb Dykstra played with Motherwell, I thought he was brilliant, and I knew nothing about the Dutch national team, so I thought, okay, it should be in there.
Well, what will surprise you is Sieb Dijkstra is not the only Dutch player that has been mentioned in the responses.
Can I guess it was Elroy Cromhier?
No, no. Neil Logan went for, I know he's Dutch, but Luke Nyholt never got a Scotland cap.
Which is, well, that is true, right?
It has kind of found a loophole in the system. I suppose he deserves a mention just for that. Dunks Maguire said Jamie Murphy, but would also like to see Chris Humphrey take the call before the call-up Levine gave him before he chose Jamaica. I can't really remember that, but it seems a bit ridiculous, to be honest.
I was going to say, I don't remember that either, to be honest with you. Yeah.
I vaguely remember chat about it, about how he might have some links to Scotland.
Danny Glacken said Matt Reynolds, which you would have to imagine will happen in the very near future. Not while he's... Didn't happen while he played with Motherwell, though. Jim Allen went for Joe Wark, which was the response from many. Colin Jackie also went for Joe Wark, saying he was the best left-back in the country. Only kept out of the Scotland team because he didn't play for the old firm. Jim Lappin said the same. Best left-back in the country. Kept out as McGrain was left-back to accommodate Jardine at right-back. Stephen Graham went for Dougie Arnott.
What about... again, at the time, he was partly probably one of our best defences. But Chris McCart, I think he only got a...
I think he got a couple of B-caps, I think, but that was it.
I think he got a B cap, so Chris McCart was maybe worthy of, you know, a cap or two as well to go along the long list of people who got one or two caps.
I suppose it kind of got a wee bit ridiculous through the time where the guys like Stephen Saunders been capped. You're thinking these guys were just at the right place at the right time. I think that friendly Saunders had been training with under 21s. In Aberdeen, and the game was at Aberdeen, so he just kind of got transferred squads rather than anything else, didn't he?
Aye, that was a bizarre squad, because I think we still had Reynolds at the time, so although I don't subscribe to the pattern that Reynolds should have been capped while I was at Motherwell, he was certainly far ahead of Saunders in line for a cap, and yet Saunders got the call, which was just bizarre. But then it was Craig Levine, so...
Yeah, I think it was more a proximity factor there.
Aye.
The SFA scrimping and paying travel expenses or something like that. But yeah, I think that would be an interesting one to do in the future. Guys that actually got capped that should never have been anywhere near the national side, which I think that would throw up a hell of a lot of responses.
No, it would also throw up Jake Taylor.
Yeah, he's also not been capped for the Scottish national team yet.
Yes,
he sadly didn't make an appearance in the Wales squad that qualified yesterday. That was very surprising. Guys, it's been a bit of a short one this week, but in comparison to the last couple of weeks, there's not really actually that much to discuss.
No, I'm surprised it lasted this long.
Yeah, sure.
Well, it's been enjoyable as ever. Thanks, and we'll be back next Monday. You've been listening to the MFC podcast. As I say, we'll be back again next week. Until then, thank you and goodbye.